Statewide satellite distribution of this program is made possible by the Lawrence Group, providing residents throughout New York State with total insurance coverage.
This program is a production of WAMC News. From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly half-hour review of New York State government and politics. Your host is political scientist and syndicated columnist Dr. Alan Shartok of the State University.
Hello, and welcome to the Legislative Gazette. There's been an almost $500 million shortfall in how much money the state has to spend. AIDS is now one of the top 10 killers in New York State. And there's been a lot happening in the state legislature, including passage of the death penalty in the state Senate again. We'll have these stories and much, much more on this week's Legislative Gazette. New York State's budget was 3 weeks late this year, and now there are more fiscal, much more fiscal troubles brewing in the state capital. Paul Rosenthal has our report.
Fiscal difficulties became apparent this week, difficulties that at the moment look like almost $500 million. Governor Cuomo is now looking for ways to cut spending to make up for the $475 million less in collected income taxes that his administration was counting on. The governor met with legislative leaders when the news was released. We asked Cuomo's spokesman Francis Sheehan what was discussed.
The recent estimate that perhaps revenues weren't going to be what we had earlier hoped they would be.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a discussion amongst Governor Cuomo, Senate Majority Leader Anderson, and Assembly Speaker Miller on how to proceed. And I think all of them agreed that we had to proceed cautiously here. Governor Cuomo indicated that that caution was certainly the watchword here now, and he reiterated his concern that he's repeated over the past few months that now is no time to be launching expensive new spending programs or things of that nature, and that we had to continue to try to squeeze every bit of accountability out of state agencies and recipients of state money in order to be able to balance our books in the months ahead.
Sheehan says all the leaders are in agreement that they must be very cautious about state spending. He also adds that the revenue shortfall can be attributed to the changes in federal and state tax laws.
It's important. We enacted a major tax cut last year, and we want to try to adhere to that. It's important in these uncertain fiscal times to be very prudent with spending. And I think the governor, who indicated today that some of the concerns that he's had for quite a few months now about the very uncertain nature of state revenues in light of the major tax overhauls that have occurred at the federal and at the state level pose a problem for state budget planners, because it's just impossible to determine with any degree of exactitude exactly what sort of revenues are going to be in place at the end of this fiscal year. So what the governor has urged and what he actually accomplished last year was to put aside money at the end of last year that we didn't know the exact size of the budget, what the budget surplus might be last year. The governor had gotten an agreement with the legislature to put aside that money. That money is now about $700 million. It's in the so-called Infrastructure Trust Fund. And what the governor is hoping that will occur again this year is that legislators will not try to come up with any new spending proposals for the rest of this year, but instead delay spending on certain items and scrutinize every spending request from state agencies and other recipients of state money in an attempt to manage this fiscal problem until we get a better handle on exactly what kind of revenues might be forthcoming for the rest of the year.
The shortfall in revenue is not the only problem. The interest rate on the state's short-term borrowing has gone up from 5.25% to 5.3%. In dollar terms, this will cost the state about $6 million. And in the midst of the fiscal troubles, the state has a new budget director. He is Governor Cuomo's chief efficiency expert, Dahl Forsythe. Cuomo appointed him to succeed Wayne Diesel, who announced recently his plans to join the KeyCorp banking firm. Forsyth joined the Cuomo administration as deputy budget director in January 1986. He became director of Governor Cuomo's Office of Management and Productivity in September of last year. The budget director is the governor's chief fiscal advisor and is largely responsible for handling the executive branch's end of state budget negotiations. The budget director is also largely responsible for formulating the governor's massive budget proposal that is unveiled each January. The departure of Wayne Diesel was expected and had nothing to do with the revenue shortfall. Nevertheless, Cuomo's spokesman Francis Sheehan says the governor has full confidence in Forsyth to enter the fray at this time.
The governor is very confident of Mr. Forsyth's ability to jump right in and do the sort of job that Wayne Diesel has done now for the past few years.
Forsyth, by the way, is the son of Dynasty star John Forsyth and actress Arlene Dahl. The 45-year-old Forsyth will begin his new job within the next few weeks. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Paul Rosenthal. This week I discussed, among many other things, the state's cash flow problems during my chat with Fred Dicker, state editor of the New York Post.
Big news this week. It turns out that Governor Mario Cuomo is $500 million or so, give or take $25 million down in terms of his budget revenue estimates. There's not enough money coming in to pay the bills.
Well, that's what the governor's budget division says, Alan. They've been suggesting that all along. Sometimes they play a game like this. Chances are it's true. It's not just a peculiarly New York phenomenon. Massachusetts is having the same problem. It looks like the days of wine and roses, a.k.a. the days of revenues driven by Reagan's deficit spending programs and Congress's deficit spending programs, may be coming to an end. Does it mean it's a crisis for New York? Not yet. Does it mean they'll have to make some adjustments? Yes.
Let's see how this whole thing works, Fred. If I take a look at my checkbook and I see there's not enough money there, then I have to either make one or two assessments. I have to decide whether there's money that's going to be coming in for the rest of the year, or I have to stop spending as much. Now, I understand that the Cuomo people are saying that part of this problem is that the money will be coming in, it's just not here yet.
Right, and that isn't necessarily a problem. I think what they're saying, though, is that right now what they're saying is that they don't think the money's going to be coming in. They had anticipated X amount of dollars, about $400 million, above and beyond what they've now collected for the month of April, the first month of the new fiscal year. It could be here in May, though, that they've underestimated what's going to come in. It could be some of that money is just going to be arriving late. If that happens, the problem is not as great as if it doesn't come in at all. If it doesn't come in at all, they have several actions they could take. Let me note that they're still in a time of great budget stress or confrontation with the Senate Republicans, who have been saying, let's spend even more. This, to some degree, could be a tactical move by the governor and his allies to embarrass Warren Anderson and his Senate Republicans.
How does it embarrass the Republicans?
Well, because the Republicans have consistently, including this year and in the last few years, maintained that the governor has hidden surpluses. He underestimates his revenues, they always say, and the bottom line being that there's more money to spend.
Now, what does Ned Regan look like in all of this, our comptroller?
Well, the state comptroller, I think, gets beaten up by an awful lot of people, and to some degree unfairly. He looks very good in this. He's been saying all along that the governor, far from being prone to spend too much, may in fact have anticipated too much money coming into the state for this new year, and therefore should have been perhaps a bit more cautious, and now he looks correct. When he made those claims, the Senate Republicans were saying that Ned Regan, notwithstanding the fact that he's a Republican also, has been playing the role of Governor Cuomo's handmaiden. They've been sort of mocking him, making fun of him. But right now, Ned Regan looks very strong, and the Senate Republicans look very weak.
Fallout from the presidential campaign, Fred, what's the mood like in the Cuomo entourage?
Well, I think it borders on depression. I think there's sort of an anticlimactic reaction now with the primary over, and the shift of focus so far away from Governor Cuomo with Mike Dukakis perceived as the hands down winner now of the Democratic presidential contest. I think there's some depression in the Cuomo camp because the governor, let's face it, is far less important than he was just a few weeks ago. Albany may be on the verge of returning to its previous role of being sort of upstate backwater to in New York. And unless George Bush wins the presidency in November, I think Mario Cuomo may all but be forgotten for the next 8 years or so, and maybe will never again be the significant figure in national Democratic politics that he was until just a few weeks ago.
He may be sad that he didn't pull the golden ring when he had the chance.
Yes, go after it, and I think some people around him are clearly sad because notwithstanding what may be best for the governor, many of them would have liked him to do what was best for them, and that is run for president.
A lot of shakeups reported potentially in the Cuomo administration. Can you tell us something about that?
Well, we've already seen a few resignations. Wayne Diesel, the budget director, Bill Emick, the housing commissioner, is sure to leave very soon. Hank DeLay, the director of state operations, is rumored to be in line for a SUNY campus presidency. It's not unusual, but I think the timing is of twofold significance. One, with the governor deciding not to run for president, I think people decided to pursue their own careers now. They would have sacrificed them, or at least put them off, I think, to have the chance of going to Washington with a new president. But now that he's not going to be doing that, I think some key Cuomo players like Sandy Frusher...
I was going to mention him today.
Yes.
Sandy Frusher is one of the governor's key political advisors.
No question.
Head of the Battery Park Authority. The
yes.
Republicans are rumored never to allow him to take a commissioner's post because they have to confirm him in the state Senate. And apparently we're hearing that he's looking.
There's no question he's looking. I would think he'll be gone in a month or two. I don't think that would have happened if a governor had run for president. We would have seen Frusher out there. Perhaps not on Battery Park City's payroll, but on the Cuomo for President Committee payroll. And then the number two reason that we're going to be seeing some changes is that traditionally at the end of the second year of a governor's four-year term, that governor reassesses the staff with an eye towards putting together a team to carry him through the next election. And come this January, I think the governor, who is probably certain to seek re-election, will be looking to make sure that he has in place people who will be with him through the 1990 election. And he'll be making it clear to people that if they're looking to get out in a year or so, they should leave early so that he could have in place people who will be with him through the election.
Fred Dicker, state editor of the New York Post. Some rather disturbing news came out of the New York State Health Department this week concerning AIDS. A report now from our own Bruce Robertson.
For the first time, AIDS is one of the top 10 killers in the state. This according to the most recent statistics from the Health Department. In fact, the report shows that more New Yorkers died in 1986 from the deadly disease than in automobile accidents. Further, Health Department spokesman Peter Slocum says the total could have been even higher than statistics indicate because over 6,000 New Yorkers died during the year from pneumonia, and that's one of the chief killers of AIDS sufferers.
It shows that while there has not been what some people referred to as the heterosexual breakout into the general population, and there is not a great spread of the AIDS virus in upstate areas like Saratoga, Essex, Oneida, Hamilton counties, for instance, there is a tremendous pool of the virus in the inner cities, particularly in Manhattan and the Bronx and Brooklyn, which is gradually spreading, probably through drug use and sharing of needles and then heterosexual contact among sex partners and involving drug abusers, that is showing up in babies and showing up in hospitals and clinics, and it means that there is a sleeping epidemic here, which is, we don't know the depth of it.
In addition, Slocum adds that Health Commissioner Dr. David Axelrod has not yet decided how to respond to a threat made last week by three surgeons groups who threatened to take Axelrod to court if he did not declare AIDS a communicable or a sexually transmissible disease rather than just a reportable disease. The New York State Societies of Surgeons, Orthopedic Surgeons, and Obstetricians and Gynecologists have said that changing the listing of the disease would force health officials to take a more active role in stopping its spread. Dr. Axelrod has been opposed to the change. The President's Commission on AIDS met in New York City this week. Dr. Richard Stone, chief of pediatrics at New York Metropolitan Hospital, had some grim testimony concerning children and AIDS.
When you're talking about AIDS, there's no good news. Every projection that comes, every report that comes in terms of the prevalence of the illness is more and more grim. With respect to children, the most reliable data now indicate that one out of every 61 babies born in the city of New York is born exposed to AIDS.
Meanwhile, all inmates entering and leaving New York's prison system could soon be tested for AIDS. State Senator Israel Ruiz has filed bills that would require AIDS testing for all inmates entering New York's prisons and voluntary examinations for those leaving custody. Ruiz says his bills are designed to protect the inmate population as well as prison personnel. He says he understands opposition to mandatory AIDS testing in the general population, but he believes testing is necessary in prisons.
I believe that, however, that the prison system is a completely different animal that we have to be dealing with. We're dealing with prisoners, many of them, 69% of them, who have been intravenous drug users or have associated with drug users and prostitutes and other people who basically might have the AIDS virus. We feel that given the fact that these people are going to be confined for an average period of about 18 months, that their close proximity to other prisoners is a danger to others. And we feel that people minimally should be given the test on a voluntary basis. And what we found when we were going to the prisons was that many of the prisoners wanted to know whether or not they had AIDS. And they felt that it would be good for them to know because this way they could take precautions.
Ruiz says diseases associated with AIDS, like pneumonia, are easier to catch when people are confined in close quarters, as they are in prison. His proposals would also require the State Department of Correctional Services to set up special medical facilities or secure areas for inmates afflicted with AIDS.
And many of them feel that these people should be put in an environment where they have the proper medical care. As you know, we have at Sing Sing a 11-bed facility for the care of the AIDS patients. We also have infirmaries in the various prisons which supposedly are supposed to take care of these people with AIDS inadequately because they really don't have the doctors and the nurses there to take care of these people.
The senator has estimated that as many as 2,400 inmates out of the state's 16,000 prisoners released each year could be infected with the AIDS virus. For the Legislative Gazette, this is Bruce Robertson.
New York State highway fatalities were up last year. And as Beth Engler reports, that's given the Department of Motor Vehicles a signal to more vigorously enforce driving regulations.
The Motor Vehicles Department reported this week that New York State highway deaths had increased 6% in 1987 to 2,328. That's the highest since 1981. Motor Vehicles Commissioner Patricia Aducci says that in addition to stricter enforcement of speed limits and seatbelt laws, the state will also try to reduce the number of impaired drivers on New York's highways. Meanwhile, anti-DWI groups rallied at the state capitol to call for stricter DWI legislation. Doris Aiken is the founder of RID Intoxicated Drivers. She says we need to crack down on drunk drivers.
We know how to deter this. And we're going to spell it out to the legislators who have held life-saving bills for 8 or 9 years. And what they have done is raise their salaries. They saw that last year while the deaths were going up, and they knew that. So we're just going to arouse public indignation that a legislator would dare to vote for raising his or her salary while they ignore the fact that one of the main issues they're supposed to address, public health and safety, is that deaths are rising.
Also at the rally was a contingent from the Batavia area, where last year three high school students and their driver education teacher were killed when a drunk driver ran into their car. Western New York Assemblyman Stephen Hawley says while tougher legislation is important, there needs to be more awareness.
Of course, any of these laws would not have helped those children and that adult that were killed in Pembroke, because this was someone, I believe, over 21, and they didn't have a license. And also, we have very strict laws on for the death penalty for someone shooting someone or knifing someone killing someone, and it still happens. I mean, you can pass all the laws in the world, and there are some people that are not law-abiding, but I think what we've done with the DWI, strengthening the DWI legislation, is we've made everyone very, very conscious about the dangers of driving while intoxicated. I think many, many people didn't realize how their senses were affected after a number of drinks, and many people are much more cautious.
The anti-DWI groups called for several measures aimed at reducing drunken driving and underage drinking. Some of their proposals included the color coding of driver's licenses of people under 21, mandatory suspension of the driver's licenses of anyone arrested for drunken driving, and making the result of blood alcohol content tests available as evidence. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Beth Angler.
There are always numerous bills that move through the state legislature that time does not allow us to cover on the Legislative Gazette. To alleviate this problem, this week we begin a new segment to cover these items while the legislature is in session. Paul Rosenthal takes a look at this week's legislative notebook.
The assembly sponsor of a New York State death penalty bill says there is some new support for capital punishment, but he still does not have the 100 votes needed to override a Cuomo veto. For the 12th year in a row, the Assembly passed the death penalty. The vote was 92 to 53. It's likely the Senate will pass it as well, but it faces almost certain veto by Governor Cuomo. We asked the bill's sponsor, Assemblyman Vincent Graber, if when it comes to overriding a veto, lawmakers are afraid to go against the governor.
Oh, no, I don't think that I don't think that anyone that's a member of the Assembly is afraid of the governor's wishes. I would not think that there's anybody that's voting for that reason. I think that people vote on a death penalty based on their philosophical beliefs relative to that question. I don't think anybody, I can't imagine anyone being, worrying about how the governor feels or how the speaker feels.
Death penalty advocates had hoped that outrage over three police officer shootings in New York City this year would change the minds of some legislators opposed to capital punishment. In his veto address last year, Cuomo said the death penalty cheapens society. Do people have the right to know what others are viewing on their home video systems? Manhattan Assemblyman Gerald Nadler doesn't think so. He's sponsoring a bill that would make it illegal for video rental or sales companies to divulge what their customers are renting or purchasing.
Well, this will assure that people don't have to fear that anybody's going to know what the videotapes they rented, going to be able to get histories of what they're interested in, that someone who decides to run for office or is up for appointment to something or other doesn't have to fear that it's going to come out that 20 years ago, he took out some film that someone's going to say, we don't want people reading these films, or that someone's going to say that look at the subversive communist films he's watching. I mean, we had this kind of problem in the McCarthy era when people started saying who's taking out what books from the library. In fact, we have a current controversy where the CIA, the FBI, or the CIA wants some librarians to tell them who's taking certain books out of the library. This is absolutely against any kind of conception of freedom and privacy. So we just want to, I don't know of a major problem now. We just want to make sure one doesn't develop in the future.
Attorney General Robert Abrams helped draft the bill. He said a list of Robert Bork's movie rentals was made public during Bork's unsuccessful Senate confirmation hearings to the U.S. Supreme Court. Abrams has also submitted a bill before the state legislature to protect people who buy homes contaminated with radon. Assemblyman Samuel Coleman is sponsoring the bill. He says it would require the buyer and the seller of a house to negotiate over the cost of testing for and reducing radon.
It does not say who should pay for an investigation, if there is, or who should pay for removal. It doesn't even force anyone to do anything. It just makes sure that in the contract, the possibility of radon is mentioned, and then it just leaves it completely to the buyer and seller to make their own arrangements if and how they want to handle it. It's a completely unobtrusive bill, and it just is in the tradition of the full disclosure consumer protection laws which we have on the books.
The bill would allow a home buyer to sue the seller for the cost of decontamination if no radon disclosure notice is in the house's sales contract. Radon is a colorless and odorless radioactive gas that may lead to lung cancer at high concentrations. It is found in homes built near higher rock formations or in certain kinds of soil. You may still find peanuts and Cracker Jack at New York State's big league ballparks, but beer may be a little harder. Under proposed legislation filed in Albany, sports facilities in New York City, Long Island, and Buffalo would be required to make 6% of their seats alcohol-free. Vendors wouldn't be able to sell beer in another 15% of the seats. The bill includes Yankee and Shea Stadiums and Madison Square Garden in New York City, the Nassau Coliseum on Long Island, and Rich Stadium, the Buffalo Auditorium, and the new Pilot Field Baseball Park in Buffalo. The plan would take effect on January 1, 1989, and be phased in over 3 years. Even if the beer-free seating bill passes the legislature, it isn't certain whether Governor Cuomo would sign such a bill into law. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Paul Rosenthal.
And that's it for this week's Legislative Gazette. The show was produced by Beth Engler. She had help from Paul Rosenthal and Bruce Robertson. We hope you enjoyed the program, and we'll tune in again next week to hear what's happening in and around the Empire State. Until then, I'm Alan Chartok.
Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC News. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. This program is made possible with funds provided by the Legislative Gazette, a weekly newspaper on state politics, with student internships available.
Statewide satellite distribution of this program was made possible by the Lawrence Group, providing residents throughout New York State with total insurance coverage.